All right, it is time for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast, ladies and gentlemen. But before we get to our guest, I have something exciting to tell you. If you love listening to the Crypto 101 podcast, you're getting two episodes a week. You're hearing about crypto experts and learn about their companies and projects. Well, guess what? Now you have the opportunity to hear from 47 of the top crypto experts for a full jam-packed 3 days, where they will discuss what they believe to be the best crypto opportunities for the year. And it's all happening during our digital currency summit. Okay. It's a virtual event. It's hosted by Pizza Mind, AKA Aaron Malone, and myself. And guess what? Your ticket to attend is totally free. So to reserve your free ticket, just go to digitalcurrencysummit.com. And click the link and go sign up. It's all done there. And you got to do it now because you don't want to miss out on this event. And we really can't wait to see you there. Again, it's digitalcurrencysummit.com.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of the Crypto 101 podcast. Pizza Mind here. I am rolling solo today. And we have an amazing guest with us. We have with us an anonymous figure from crypto, which is not a bad thing at all. And we're going to explain why in just a moment. But I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Huff House from Reimagined Finance. Huff, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Thank you for having me, and good evening from London.
It's a pleasure to have you. So the first question on everyone's mind, we're just going to address it. Why be anonymous? Why is it so important to you to not just put yourself out there like most other people?
Yeah, so Reimagined Finance, we have a fully doxed developer who initiated and started the project. And if you like, I'm the kind of maybe number two, number three guy on the project. My rationale for being anon at the moment is just because there's so many scammers in the crypto space. And given that I oversee the investments side of things, a lot of people know that my profile is the profile that oversees the treasury. And with that in mind, we saw some early people trying to create fake Telegram handles, fake Twitter addresses, etc., trying to swindle people out of their money. Now, if you're fully doxed with an image, for whatever human psychological reason, it's a lot easier for people to fall for those scams as well. People just trust somebody that's got an image that looks like the person you think that you're dealing with. So that's the first thing. I never want anybody to get rugged. I never want anybody to get scammed. And if that means hiding behind an identity or a digital avatar myself, then fair enough. The second thing is because I have a public profile already. And even though I'm full-time with Reimagined Finance, I'm just not ready on a personal level for the overlap between the two identities at the moment, just because they are very, very different, everything that I've done in the world of finance and then everything I'm doing right now. So even though I'm full-time on Reimagined Finance, I'm just not ready to tie a link to everything that I'm doing in real life as well at the moment. Having said that, I am doxed to our developer fully, and he knows who I am. He knows where to find me, and if anything ever happened to me or to the wallets, he knows who and where my wife is, and she has access to everything.
Okay, there we go. So this is not just a matter of privacy. There's actually a lot of strategy behind this. And in addition, you know, if someone's trying to hack the treasury, they don't know who you are, where to find you as well. So that's another, you know, great thing that you've thought of. I remember you mentioned that to me in a previous conversation we had. And you touched on something there that I want to expand on. You mentioned, you know, your other identity in the world of finance. Can you give us a little bit about your background without giving yourself away, so it makes more sense why you've decided to do what you do?
Yeah, so I think even if I give a couple of pointers, it'd be fairly easy to find out. So I worked for a big investment bank in London. I was on the equity derivatives trading side. So think about call options, put options, and then all the exotic variants of that. on major indices. So think FTSE, S&P, etc., Eurostoxx 50. I did that for a large number of years, and then I switched over to a sales role. They needed somebody that could bridge the gap between understanding trading and risk management, but then also speak to the C-suite of investors, so CIOs at some big family offices and asset management firms. And ultimately, they were my clients. So if they knew who I was, if they knew I was Huff, they'd be able to make the link very quickly.
Makes sense. And we definitely don't want to harm any of those relationships or have bank accounts affected and all that stuff, which is still a reality in this day and age. I know for my fund, I recently reached out to a lot of major banks, seeing if they've changed their tune about opening accounts. And all of them said, no, we will only service. Actually, all of them said no, except for one. And they said they will only service exchanges and mining farms. That's it. So
there is one other rationale, and it's quite a horrible thing to say, but there are physical attacks on people when they know that you're a signatory on a multi-sig or that you control a wallet. You have seen in real life attacks going up over the past couple of years, and I think, you know, it's one thing if you're a developer working on a contract; it's another thing if you're the person deploying capital in farms.
That's unfortunately true. Especially if, you know, you're traveling, people can definitely spot you. So we wish you nothing but the best and the wellness, of course. So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing. You left the world of traditional finance, presumably, I don't know, but you're spending your full time now on this Reimagined Finance project. What is Reimagined Finance?
Sure. So Reimagined Finance is a farming as a service protocol. Now, I say those words as if the sector's been around for a long time. It's really not. The first provider in this space came about only 3 months ago, and Reimagined Finance was only launched 53 days ago. So farming as a service is effectively this model. You have people that have crypto assets, let's say in Ethereum and USDC, and for a long time, they've just sat on those assets. Now, where we come in is a lot of people want to earn yield on those assets, but don't necessarily know how to do that, or they don't know how to risk manage those positions, where the best protocols are, when to take profits, etc., when to compound. So it's a fairly simple model. People buy the Reimagined Finance token, ReFi, on Uniswap. It's an ERC-20 token. And when they do that, they get exposure to the farming strategies that we deploy. The farming strategies, let's say you invest 10 ETH today, a portion of that will come into the treasury. We will farm on multiple chains like Avalanche, Arbitrum, Phantom, etc. And then the yield that we generate from our farming strategies, whether it's stablecoins, LPing, or more high-risk plays, we return directly to users via a decentralized app on the launchpad that they can just quickly look into and claim their distributions.
That sounds awesome. So how do you decide what's a good yield play versus something that is garbage?
So that's quite an in-depth process, and it's a process which we've really built out over the 53 days that we've been around. So the portfolio splits positions into low risk, medium risk, and high risk. So in the low risk bucket, we have all our stablecoin strategies. So think optimizing the yield that you might receive on USDC, USDT, DAI, etc., those kind of stable coins, which are a large part of the crypto ecosystem. And there, ultimately, where the yield comes from is effectively by supplying your asset for people that demand stable coins for whatever reason. They might have a demand for leverage, or they might have a demand to borrow against an asset, take a loan, whatever it might be. That yield can vary anywhere between 10 and 100% APY. Just depending on the protocol you use, and I can touch upon which protocols we decide to use. The medium risk bucket is full of positions that are liquidity providing. So we'll take a pair like, let's say, ETH-USD, and we will provide that asset in equal measures to an exchange of some sort. And whenever anybody trades on that pair, let's say ETH-USD on a decentralized exchange, we'll earn a percentage of the swap fees or the trading fees, and that will be compounded. So there is a big incentive for us to enter those kind of LP positions and provide liquidity. And then in the high-risk bucket, we have some more interesting stuff that we do, private sales, perpetual swaps. We have positions in a couple of Olympus DAO-style DAO models, etc. So how we choose a protocol is broadly similar across low risk, medium risk, and high risk. The first thing that we do is look at protocol safety. That's by far the most important thing. And so to do that, we would take a look at their audits. We would look at places like rugdoc.io or defisafety.com. We'd review the code. We'd see how long they've been around. Once we're comfortable with the protocol from a safety perspective, which is always number one, then we do some analysis on the yield. How stable has that yield been? What is the TVL? What is our projected returns? And how long do we expect those projected returns to last for? The third thing that we look at is volatility, which is somewhat tied to the second point. We want to be sure that we're getting the yield that is advertised, and we want to be sure that we can execute that in a low-cost way as well. And then there's a couple of other metrics. So preferably, and now given refi size, preferably we would have a relationship with the protocol directly that we're investing in. And that means speaking to the founders, maybe getting some preferential terms or getting early access to pools. And that's been our way of operating so far. So it's quite a long process. I've documented it in a few Medium articles as well, how we think about risk and how we put on a trade. And those Medium articles go into a bit more depth about how we exactly do that.
That's great. Now, you mentioned rugpull.io and defisafety.com as places
rugdoc.
That...
Yeah, doc, D-O-C.
Rugdoc.io.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. And these places kind of help you see if the protocol is legitimate?
They're full of... Yeah, they're basically developers who have reviewed all the code. It's almost like crowdsourced developers who have reviewed the code and give their opinions and their insights. And it's by no means the only thing to look at, but it does give you a bit more safety when investing.
Well, that's tremendous. I mean, we didn't used to have these tools, I mean, even a year ago. So that's amazing that we've got people that are willing to dedicate their time to that now. So if we look at the world of yield farming, I mean, it really itself is only like a year old. It started with Yearn Finance and their vaults, and then it quickly expanded. We had all kinds of other things, and it didn't really take off the way I think a lot of people expected it to, perhaps because it's more of a market neutral strategy, and you know, people are still trying to swing for the fences with some of their holdings and all these crazy meme coins coming out. But if you go to somewhere like, you know, I'd say a lot of these platforms have already come and gone, fallen apart, but Yearn is still around, and there's another one, Harvest, which is there. But you look there and you see so many different choices and pools. You don't really know where to put your money. So I guess that's where farming as a service is coming in, because you're going to make these decisions for people. And that takes us through, I guess this is the creation of DeFi 3.0 is what some people are saying. Can you describe in your own words, what is DeFi 1.0, DeFi 2.0, and now 3.0?
Yeah, so DeFi 1.0 in my mind is when I fell down the crypto rabbit hole, especially the DeFi rabbit hole. And that was just slightly over a year ago. So I'd say that was 2019 and the DeFi summer that... that people refer to. And effectively what started DeFi 1.0 was the idea that you could have decentralized lending and borrowing markets. So for a long time, if you wanted to either earn interest on your assets or borrow assets, you would go to a bank, a centralized entity. When things like Aave and Compound came about, the real innovation there was that you could supply an asset, let's say your USDC, and earn some interest on that from borrowers directly, and they were just an intermediary taking a fee. Similar kind of model with Compound as well, and then you would earn your rewards in the native token. The native token had value because it was extracting a percentage of the fees for every swap that took place on their protocol. So what ended up happening was a bit of a TVL war, where different DeFi protocols would pop up all the time to attract TVL with these super high APYs. You would see capital flock to a protocol. Everybody would farm and harvest that native token, and then they would dump it and move on to the next shiny new thing. And it was called DeFi Summer because you saw plenty of projects which kind of would 100x overnight and then get dumped to zero as the mercenary yield farmers moved from farm to farm. So that was DeFi 1.0. And ultimately, a lot of people lost a lot of money there. Not only were there rugs and scams in there, there was a lot of whales who effectively controlled price action and whale groups who knew exactly what they were doing, which farms to enter. They were coordinating price action, dumping everything at the same time, and a lot of people left holding the baby. DeFi 2.0 was more interesting for me from a timing perspective, because if we cast our mind back to May of last year, crypto basically had a summer lull, and Bitcoin and ETH were trading, you know, 50 to 60% down from their highs. We had this kind of really choppy price action, and not much was happening. But in the midst of all that, Olympus DAO had kickstarted this DeFi 2.0 model, this idea that you could have a reserve currency, and it had value as long as everybody staked their position. And if you did that, based on the kind of game theory behind it all, the treasury could constantly mint their token at a discount with a delay of, let's say, 5 to 10 days. They could effectively bring assets into the treasury. And from those assets, they could also sell and provide additional new tokens to existing stakers as well. So the whole model relied on people minting at a discount and being happy to not receive their tokens for 5 days. The treasury ultimately gaining a mark-to-market gain because they hadn't paid out to these people yet. And then in the interim, the stakers on the other side of that holding and earning these, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 100,000% APYs. And so the names that were popularized there are Olympus DAO and then Time Wonderland. That model has come under a lot of pressure, as we've seen, and I would go as far to say that it's failed in its current form. And so where we're at today, DeFi 3.0, is admitting that the world of farming is complicated, and there's very few people that know exactly what they're doing in this space, but the product market fit is absolutely clear. There are so many people who don't even put their ETH on deposit to earn a basic 5 to 10% yield. And that for me is like the gateway to DeFi farming. If you're not doing that, then you're just taking directional price exposure to ETH. You're not even earning any interest on that. So it begins there and it goes really down the degree of complexity and what ReFi does. And we're by no means the only provider, although we're pretty much the largest pure play FAS provider. We do all of that for you, us and the farming team, and we make it as simple and as transparent as possible.
So timing the crypto markets is hard, right? No surprise. You do tons of research to invest, and then you just end up being down 20% the next day sometimes. Why? Who knows? Maybe it was due to an unexpected sell-off that you never saw coming, or some liquidation cascade that you just didn't have, you know, enough margin for error there. And whatever it is, I just see too many investors falling prey to one problem. And it's just not diversifying their portfolio enough. And no, buying Ethereum instead of Bitcoin, to me at least, that's not diversifying. Tons of elite investors are adding other alternative assets like multi-million dollar blue chip art to their portfolios. And the secret to doing it is Masterworks.io. Okay, this investment app has turned paintings by icons like Picasso and Warhol and even Banksy into investable products. Look, since releasing their beta 3 years ago, they've securitized $350 million of art and over 300,000 investors have signed up. Okay, many of them happen to be my listeners. So to discover the power of art investing, head over to masterworks.io/crypto101. Again, that's masterworks.io/crypto101. It's very important as well. Take a look at the disclosures at masterworks.io/disclaimer. And we're also going to link to those in the show notes.
So if I wanted to be part of Reimagined Finance, do I need to go stake my ETH somewhere or a bunch of other tokens? Or how does it work?
It's even simpler than that. So the way that the smart contract works is you would buy the ReFi token on Uniswap, and there is buy and sell taxes, which are symmetrical. So currently, as it stands, there's a 12% tax. So let's say you buy 10 ETH worth of ReFi tokens. 1.2, so 12%. 1. ETH comes into the treasury, and we would farm that on multiple chains as described. The other 8.8 ETH is ultimately given back to you as ReFi tokens. This is a token which has a free float, and it ultimately trades with a market cap of just over $60 million as of right now. And that token itself has value because your holding of ReFi tokens allows you to connect your wallet on the dApp. Once you connect your wallet on the dApp, your ReFi token count comes up, and there you can see exactly what the mark-to-market of your ReFi tokens is, which increases as price action takes place. But more importantly, all your claimable distributions in ETH are available there for you to just in one click claim. There's no staking involved or anything like that. Whenever we generate yield in the farm, we then send, let's say, 100, 200, 300 ETH, whatever it might be as yield generated, to a dividend tracker wallet that is prorated per your token supply that you hold.
Wow. So it's basically a way to earn like passive income in Ethereum, which is unbelievable. The other thing that was really interesting is this ReFi token model. I mean, most tokens you like buy low, sell high, rinse and repeat. But because of this tax, it really doesn't make it economical to do that. Plus, the token functions almost like an LP token, where it represents a share of a pool. So, I mean, you don't trade your Uniswap LP tokens on the open market. You just kind of sit there and hold it and try and accumulate more shares if, you know, prices go down. But that's super interesting. So
the incentives are super interesting because by buying and selling, ultimately what you're doing is providing capital for the farm. And the rationale is that we can generate a much higher yield than you could on that ETH. But if people want to sell the token, and that's totally fine, the sell tax also bolsters the treasury as well. So our long-term holders really understand that if tomorrow there was price action and everybody decided to sell ReFi for whatever reason, our treasury could ultimately double overnight, and we would be farming with double the size treasury, and our project would be even more valuable. So the price would ultimately is floored at a certain level, and the price would go up and correspond with the book value of our assets. Like you said, you're ultimately also buying an LP token and a share of a farming pool.
That's really interesting. So how did you become involved with ReFi, and what was it about this project that attracted you to join it over so many others in the space?
Yeah, so if I cast back to my banking career, so I left that in 2019, and I ultimately became a free agent, enjoying my financial freedom, where I was earning passive income from DeFi, and I was loving that. You know, it was a very privileged position to be in as a person. So I had spent the last 2-3 years just doing things that I love doing. Reading, writing, traveling, etc., whilst spending a lot of time just keeping up to date with DeFi developments. Now, when Reimagine Finance launched, and they were, like I said, by no means the first project in this space, the real innovation that ReFi did was to pay your distributions in ETH. And that appealed to me because no other project had done that. There were other fast projects which paid you in the native token that they had launched. So imagine you were earning more ReFi tokens. But that didn't make sense, because what would happen is as people earn those native tokens, just like farming, you want to sell them. You want to crystallize those gains and make some passive income. So what I really like about the innovation that ReFi did, and I was an investor first in ReFi, is they had this really nice looking dashboard, simple and easy to use. They had some really epic Twitter spaces, and they had this ability to earn your passive income in ETH, where me, I'm at a stage in my life where I'm ETH denominated, I think, in terms of how much ETH I have. So I really liked all of that. And when I found out that MathDroid, our lead developer, was fully doxxed with a LinkedIn and a public GitHub, etc., I realized he was also a member of DeveloperDAO. So for those that don't know, DeveloperDAO is an NFT gated community for people that are building in Web3. And I'm also a member of DeveloperDAO. And there's a very limited number of people that can be developers. So I reached out to him on there, and I was like, dude, I love your project, love what you're doing. This is my experience. If you need somebody to really scale the farming stuff, we should have a chat. And from there, it was just a real bromance. it was marrying up, almost too good to be true, my skill set, what I had been interested in, and then a team of 8 or 9 people who really wanted to build a billion-dollar business.
That's fantastic. One of my favorite things about ReFi is that community, which you came from, which I came from. So full disclosure for our listeners, I'm a big holder of ReFi as well. It was one of those things that really just felt right in my gut from day one. And the more I did my due diligence and research, it just continued to impress me. MathDroid's an amazing human being. So yeah, it makes sense. The same story over here. It's just an amazing stuff that they're being built over there.
Can I just add to that as well?
Yes.
To my earlier point about having that financial freedom, I didn't want to give my time to anything that didn't excite me fully, that I could immerse myself in fully. And at no point was I hesitant to jump on board Reimagine Finance, because when they launched, they said something. They said, we've got a fixed supply of $1 billion. We're not going to pay reflections in a native token. We're not going to have an inflationary token. We have 1 billion tokens because we can hit $1 per token and we can have $1 billion market cap. And that vision was so clear to me, because I really believe that this is at minimum $1 billion business in terms of market cap. And so for me, it was just so exciting to execute this in a way that differentiates itself from every other Uniswap project. And the way that we have done that, and this is coming from the team, not just me, is to be super transparent on everything we're doing.
Yeah. And being super transparent with how you look at your business, it basically says anything under $1 billion is a good value for this token, according to its founders and holders and creators. So that's pretty interesting into and of itself, at only a $60 million market cap at the time of this recording. So something to think about. Can you give us some advice just on risk management in general? There's a lot of people that are just getting into crypto or have been in the space for maybe 6 months, and their first token was Doge. Their second was Shiba or XRP, and you know, they heard it from a friend or from Ashton Kutcher, whatever his name is. And, you know, that was their entry to crypto. But no one ever sat down and told them how to build a portfolio or manage risk of something going to zero. They're just, they treat their crypto tokens like a sports team. They're just all in, all about it, super excited. Can you give us just some basic advice on how to not lose our asses in this space?
Yeah. So, your answer depends on how much you've got to invest. So if you're somewhere between kind of 0 and 10K and that's what you're looking to invest, then you need to invest with high conviction in 2 or 3 things. And to have high conviction in something, it means really doing your research, getting to know the founders of the team, and you'll be surprised. In the world of crypto, because it's so decentralized and is such a flat hierarchy, you can reach out to the founders fairly quickly. You can join a Telegram, you can join a Discord, and you can really get a sense of the pulse of what's going on. Are these guys in it for the short term, or are they really truly committed to building something? And once you get that conviction and you've done your research, really just don't diversify. Put yourself in 2 or 3 bets that you really believe in, assess the community, and take profits when you can. That's going to really scale your returns. If you've got a portfolio slightly bigger than that, I think you can think with a slightly more institutional mindset. And what I mean by that is you want to start thinking about building diversification across different strategies for different market scenarios. So I would have your plays, which are going to work really well in a bull market, so long-only exposure. And then I would have your plays, which work well in a more neutral or bear market scenario, which I would say ReFi fits into that category there. Something that earns you passive income, is risk managed itself, and you're effectively earning an APR or an APY, which will cushion price movements to some extent. So if price can go down 30, 40%, you're not too worried, because in the meantime, you've been earning these 300, 400% APYs on swap fees or whatever it might be. Just a word of caution, you know, Charlie Munger, he always says, what makes me better than 99% of other people is just that I avoid the mistakes. And I think rather than look for the for the 1% of gem advice, the real solid thing that will differentiate your portfolio is to avoid the common mistakes. So be very wary of Twitter influencers. These are people who have been given or airdropped a percentage of the supply of a token. They're in it to elevate the price of that token for a very short period of time, and they will dump it on you. There may be exceptions to that, one or two, but the more that I've spent time on crypto Twitter, I've just realized there's a lot of these people with 10, 50, 100,000 followers, and I'd just be a bit wary of their calls. The second thing to be wary of is just jumping on something that has no utility. You can always sleep a bit better if you know that the project you're investing in has a real-world use case, and to understand that real-world use case, because you're less likely to paperhand it if you understand exactly what it's intending to do as well. So those are two mistakes I would really avoid, which is not understanding the project that you're investing in, and B, does it have some kind of utility to it as well?
Great advice. All right, Huff, before we let you go, just one question we ask everyone that comes on the show. Is there anyone out there that you really admire in the space that you want to give a shout out to?
I love that question. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of people in the crypto education space, and they are on Twitter and they're on YouTube in particular. I'm trying to think who's been super influential to my kind of journey and understanding. I'll shout out one guy. He was a guy called shivsack.eth. He's got a Twitter handle, and he writes these incredibly long threads just explaining different DeFi protocols. So it's shivsak.eth with infographics as well. And anybody who's in that space of educating people without a product per se to sell, they're just doing it out of pure love and passion. I have a real admiration for them. He's by no means the only one, but there's a lot of people like that.
That's tremendous. We definitely need more crypto educators in this space. So Huff, thank you so much for all your time that you gave us today. And where can we follow you on Twitter to check out all your updates?
So you can follow me. I am Huff House at Huff House 9. And I've got a MetaMinds NFT. So it's this like statue of a white kind of bust with the head chopped off. So you'll know it's the right person there. And you might find it interesting to follow me because I post every trade that we put on in real time.
Wow. That's incredible transparency. That's wild. All right, Huff. Well, thank you so much for everything you've done for ReFi, the crypto space, and we're definitely going to keep tabs on you. So thank you so much. And we will see you, Crypt Nation, next week with another great episode.
Thank you for having me.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.